Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And this week is a long distance mini episode.
Yep.
While Madigan is on vacation.
Yep. Living it up here in Minnesota.
How is Minnesota?
It's good. It's a little on the cool side and I didn't pack accordingly, but it's fine. It's fun.
Well, because it shouldn't be. If you're in LA, it's still like 90 degrees here.
Yeah, it's like it was in the mid 70s today. They said that it was to the low 80s, but it still felt pretty cool. But it's nice. It's a nice change of pace too. So,
yeah. Here in LA, the pod closet was so hot that I'm recording in the dining room. So if it sounds a little echoey or if you hear cat shenanigans, that would be why.
Yeah.
But
we can only do what we can just to give you all that content you so crave.
Madigan, I feel like I haven't talked to you in so long.
Keegan, you have no idea how much I've missed you.
It has been a crazy couple of weeks.
I
was gone for an entire week on a boat and it doesn't even really feel like it. It's the weirdest thing. Like as soon as you get back to your regular routine, it's just like nothing ever happened.
Exactly. I know. I just want to hold you in my arms so badly.
Oh, soon. Soon. So the only thing that really changed for me is that now I'm a rum drinker because I was just on a cruise and
you do. Keegan, I'm a beer drinker now.
Oh my.
I know.
That's a big change.
I know. Who am I?
That's a big change in a very short period of time.
I know. I just haven't tried beer really in years. And I went to like a baseball game and that's what you do. You drink beer.
That's very true.
Yeah. And people here go to breweries all the time. So I went to a brewery and I was like, this shit is good.
I had beer when I was in Cabo because it was like the cheapest thing you could do. You could get like six beers, like a bucket of six beers for like $8 or something.
A bucket. I love it.
A bucket of beers.
Bucket of beers.
But right now, I'm drinking a frozen pina colada.
Ooh.
As we record because I'm having beach vibes.
I was just going to say, are you having withdrawal?
I'm having like hella withdrawal, yeah.
Hella withdrawal? Okay.
But I mean, only from like rum beverages because I'm not having withdrawal from cruise food because I ate so goddamn much. That I am now, I've been keto for the last 3 days.
Yeah.
Because I've been like...
I do that whenever I like have a bunch of junk food or like don't eat very well. And then I
felt terrible.
I just want green beans and salads.
I know. Yeah. I had salad for like 2 days straight because I was just like...
Your body's like begging you.
Yeah. It's like stop eating steak for every single meal.
That's
not necessary.
Amazing.
Steak and soft serve is what I survived on that boat.
Wow.
That's it was amazing. Good. It was a good life, but my body did suffer.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, should we just kind of get right into it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really only have one thing.
Me too. But I have, well, I kind of have two. I have one thing that is more serious, I guess, and then another thing that is very positive.
I don't have anything that I feel like falls on either side of the aisle. It's just the main thing that's in the news right now. So
talk to me
I feel
about
like we
it.
Have to talk about it.
You go first.
Okay, so the biggest thing that happened, and it happened yesterday, both Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort, who Michael Cohen is Trump's attorney slash fixer-upper guy.
Yeah.
And Paul Manafort, who is a incredibly seedy and disgusting human being. If you listen to the podcast Behind the Bastards, which I always recommend, they have a two-parter on Paul Manafort, and if you think he's shitty, he's way more shitty than you think he is.
So, that.
Yeah, I mean, some episodes are better than others, and those two episodes they can be dry in places, but it's good information to know about like this guy is a piece of shit, and I don't feel bad at all that he is going away for a little while. And he's not even going away for the worst shit. Like, he's going away for federal tax and bank fraud. But you might know of Paul Manafort because he was the campaign chairman for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So that's how people would know him as of late. But like I said, his work with Donald Trump is probably actually the least shitty stuff that he's done professionally, which is really saying something.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start with Paul Manafort. A federal jury yesterday found or I guess Tuesday, found Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, guilty on 8 of the 18 charges he faced in his tax and bank fraud trial. Awesome. Speaking on Tuesday evening in Charleston, West Virginia, Trump said Manafort was a quote-unquote good man. It doesn't involve me, but I still feel, you know, it's a very sad thing that happened.
This I still has feel, you know.
Yeah, and I love this. Okay, so he says that, you know, it's a really sad thing that happened. And then immediately, because our president can't stay focused for longer than 5 seconds,
right.
He says, this has nothing to do with Russian collusion. This is a witch hunt and a disgrace. Which is just like, dude, stop bringing it up.
I know.
Like, do you know how guilty that makes you look whenever you're the one who brings it up constantly? Like, no one was talking about that right now. You brought it up.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
This verdict makes it absolutely clear that the Mueller probe is not a witch hunt. It is a serious investigation that is rooting out corruption and Russian influence in our political system at the highest levels, which I think people are kind of looking at this and seeing it as a huge win.
Yeah.
Which it is, because it's the first time that we're seeing two people very close to Trump.
Some sort of thing right. happen.
Yeah. Two people who are very, very close to Trump are criminals, are yeah. actually convicted criminals. But as Lindsey Graham pointed out, he said, the American legal system is working its will in both the Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen cases. Thus far, there have yet to be any charges or convictions for colluding with the Russian government by any member of the Trump campaign in the 2016 election. So that is something that we really need to keep in mind, that although this looks really good, and if you had told me at the beginning of the Trump presidency when I was still all like really, hopeful. Really riled up and ready,
yeah.
I would be super excited right now.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't think I will be excited until I see Trump actually going down for something. Because right now,
he's still pretty safe.
He's still pretty safe. I mean, if anything, I would say that the Michael Cohen situation has Trump in more hot water than the Paul Manafort mm-hmm. situation. Of course, his proximity to Paul Manafort doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
But with Michael Cohen pleading guilty to 8 federal counts, one of those counts related to campaign finance violations.
Oh.
So in those tapes that he released where him and Trump are talking about paying somebody off, that's really bad for Trump.
That looks because really bad.
Yeah, yeah, because it's basically them saying, like, we can kind of hide this money and say that it's campaign violations, when in reality they were paying somebody off to keep quiet during yeah. the campaign, because it would look really bad for Trump. So,
right.
I mean, we're kind of in a middle ground position, but I feel like it's a really good thing to bring up. You know, I don't know. It's exciting, but I'm tentative.
I honestly haven't given it that much time, because for me, it's like the talk is great, but I don't, you know, I've had my hopes up with that stuff too many times. So it's just kind of like, I'm not going to believe it yet until something more happens. You
right.
know?
I mean, I'm happy that these people are going away, because they're shit people.
Yeah.
I think Cohen
just
took
don't know
a
what it
plea
means
deal.
For like our country yet, you know?
Right. I mean, and I was having a conversation with a coworker earlier today where I was basically like, it's great. I'm happy it's happening. I do feel like it's one step closer.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think I had this expectation at the beginning of this presidency that when this shit started to hit the fan, that people on the other side, that you could kind of, that they would eat crow, that you could kind of be like,
yeah.
told you so.
But there's
you know
so
what I mean?
Many things, but like he... I mean, I've been talking about Keep It Weird a lot, our friends that we had our live show with, and they did a really great, they have a really awesome cult series that's kind of like ongoing with their show, and their most recent one, which I think was episode 51, is where they talk about like brainwashing in politics, especially with our current presidency.
Right.
And it's so fascinating, because
it is.
Like Trump, you know, it's kind of like, you know how in like North Korea, like they physically can't watch anything else but like the propaganda of North Korea. Well, Trump has basically told everybody that's not Fox News is lying to you. So everybody
oh yeah
believes
truth
him.
Is not the truth. Rudy Giuliani literally said those words last week.
I know. So his followers, the people that believe in Trump, are not going to be taking these things that are happening and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. There's going to be excuses made in other news coverage that's going to make it it's going to spin the narrative in a different way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not willing to admit their faults yet.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. propaganda machine is really intense regardless. Like, even outside of this presidency, it's super intense. But that kind of plays into another thing that I kind of wanted to touch on is QAnon. Have you heard about QAnon?
I have not. Tell me about it.
So QAnon is basically this group of like really loyal right-wing Trump supporters who believe that someone, I think it started on the internet, like on like 8chan or something insane, or Reddit, where someone said like, I have Q-level FBI clearance, which is, I don't even know if that's the thing.
What?
But he's like, I have Q-level FBI clearance, and I'm telling you that this whole Mueller investigation is actually a cover, and Mueller and Trump are working together to bring down Obama and the Clintons. So there's a bunch of people who legitimately, with their whole heart and soul, believe that this is an actual thing that's happening, and they're showing up at Trump rallies with these like QAnon t-shirts.
Oh my God.
Right? And they believe it. Like, there's, you can read the most insane like threads on like 4chan or 8chan about how they're losing friendships and they're losing family members and their wife is getting ready to divorce them because no one will understand
crazy.
The truth. Right. I mean, totally. But like, they're seeing it as like, oh, everyone else is just sheeple and they're buying into this when this is really the truth. And
they've
we're going to be vindicated in the end. Right.
They've taken the red pill and everybody else is not seeing the truth.
But what I love about it is that there's such a time limit to this, right? Because in their minds, at the end of this Mueller investigation, they're going to be vindicated because the veil is going to be unlifted and you're going to see that Mueller and Trump were on the same side all along. And that's not going to happen.
No,
so
it's not.
I don't know what...
Yeah, there is a time limit for it.
But I don't know if that will... I mean, I really feel like it is cult mentality. I feel like people are so far gone at this point that...
Yeah.
Even that won't be enough.
No.
Like, they'll still find another conspiracy that's like, well it panned out this way because XYZ.
Right. Well, that's what conspiracy theorists do. You know, they believe these really extreme out there things, which, you know, it's fun to learn about, but it's another thing when you start dedicating your belief system around these
conspiracies. Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just an interesting thing to kind of keep our eye on.
Yeah.
The things that are going on with Manafort, I really hope he gets the maximum sentence, which I think is like 18 years, because he's trash. And I'm really interested to see the way the rest of this is going to unfold.
Yeah.
While keeping my expectations at an all-time
low. At a minimum. Exactly. We got to keep our expectations low.
Can't get hurt.
So,
I can't be hurt again.
Yeah, I just can't set myself up for getting hurt anymore.
Got to protect my heart.
I know, guys, my heart. So... I want to talk to you guys a little bit about Ms. Asia Argento.
Oh.
Have you been hearing the latest news, Keegan?
Yeah.
So we spoke about her in an episode.
Oh, she was a WCW for us.
Oh, my God. She was. That's right.
Yeah, she was.
And we also spoke about her because there was a time where she was feeling like she wasn't being like invited into the movement with open arms, and she was having
even
issues.
Though she's kind of a leader of the Me Too movement,
right. So
she was one of the first to really detail graphically what
happened.
Harvey Weinstein had done,
to her. Exactly. So, in a new turn of events, she allegedly has covered up a sexual assault with a 17-year-old named Jimmy Bennett, who I believe now is 22, but at the time of the assault, he was that age.
And she was 37.
She was 37. And so it seems like, you know, at the time, the 17-year-old, like, went along with it, which doesn't mean that it's right. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean it's not still an assault and abuse of power. And I'm sure he still feels awful and taken advantage of. So I don't want to take that away from him at all. And I know that it was really hard for him. I've read some articles. It was really hard for him to come out and talk about it. And what's really weird to me is that in 2004, he played her son in a movie called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things.
That's
and
gross.
Like, there's pictures of like him and her when he is a baby. Like, he's a little, not a baby, but like, he's little. He's young. He looks like he's maybe 7 or 8.
Yeah, and there's a 20-year age gap there.
It's insane. And so, like, there's even these text messages that leaked where they're talking, and her, I don't know if it's her friend or her lawyer, because like, they're asking really smart questions. So like, how are you going to explain the age thing? Because
I think it's her friend. I read the same ones.
Yeah. Like, you knew that he was younger than you. And she was like, well, I didn't know he was a minor until after the fact. And then she's like, well, and you know, I was having sex with guys when I was, you know, 17, and they were my age, you know, and how in other countries, in France, it's the age of consent is 15.
Yeah, I didn't see all of those text messages. I just feel like, I don't know, it's a really tricky road to tread on, because she says like, oh, nothing happened, and there's pictures of them topless together where he has a shirt on and neither does she.
Yeah,
and she's like, well, you can just see my tits, that doesn't mean anything. And I'm like, you're topless with a 17-year-old, even if nothing happened.
That means a lot.
If we reversed the genders, we wouldn't be thinking that this was okay.
Yeah,
and I think it's hard because we talked about the MRAs in our last or a couple of episodes ago, and they are using this as a way to completely invalidate the Me Too movement. And it's so much like mental gymnastics to use it to invalidate the Me Too movement, because it's still a person being assaulted regardless of the gender and regardless of the perpetrator. And
needs to be, I think, taken people just as seriously.
Yeah. And I think people have a really hard time. I think people have a really hard time acknowledging that someone can be a perpetrator and a victim at the same time.
Yeah.
And she could be both. And there's no reason that it should invalidate either experience.
Nope.
But I think she deserves to have consequences.
Right. We still do have to look at her differently. You know what I mean?
Right. No, she deserves consequences, you know? Yeah. I mean, she's a victim of Harvey Weinstein, and her outrage over the way that she was treated is still valid. But that doesn't give her a free pass
to assault somebody else.
To have done what she did.
Right.
Because, I mean, quite often, abused people abuse others. Like, that happens quite often. But that doesn't give the abuser any excuses.
Uh-huh. You know? Years ago, I can't remember the year, but there was, like, some sort of settlement where she paid him $380,000.
Right.
She's claiming that, like, oh, he's this poor, failed child actor who doesn't know anything, and he's...
And he extorted her.
He extorted her, and that he was doing really badly financially and didn't have any money, and she and Anthony Bourdain felt sorry for him, so they, like, wrote him this check or whatever. Like, not really implicating that it had anything to do with that necessarily, even. Which I think is bull, because she knows the circumstances. At first she's like, no, it never happened. And now she's like, well, it happened, but...
Right. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Like, I think that there is truth probably on both sides of that. Like, maybe they did give him money because he needed it and not as a payment. But regardless, the evidence and the way that she admitted to having, you know, interactions with him when he was under 18, she did admit that in text messages. Yeah. So regardless of why you gave him this money, whether it was a payoff or not, your actions are still inappropriate.
Yes.
So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, you
know?
Yeah. And it's really disappointing and sad.
And there's still money being exchanged, where even if it on the outside was meant to be for something else, I'm sure that if he was like, you know, I need this money. I mean, even if there was like blackmail involved, I don't know. I'm not saying there was. I mean, I'm just thinking of all the different circumstances where she's like, well, I don't want this to get out, so I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that this doesn't go public. So,
I mean, and the same thing applies to her that would apply to any man that we'd be talking about. Which is, don't put yourself in that situation in the first place. Like, you were the adult here. You are 20 years his senior. You were 37. Mm-hmm. He was a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And regardless of his motives or anything that he may have done, you're the responsible party.
You have to make the right decisions. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so this is on you.
In danger.
Yeah. At the end of the day, this is on you. So
no matter what the circumstances are, it still happened. And what she did was incredibly wrong. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. So. I very much agree.
Bummer, but
it's but you know what? I'm happy that the story is out. I'm happy that male victims are being heard.
Agreed.
And
agreed.
So agreed. I was glad to read it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important. And I hope that this makes, it might make, again, the same way it did for men with the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. it might make for a very uncomfortable conversation that needs to be had amongst women as well, like in society.
Uh-huh.
But I think that it all needs to come out. I yep. think that men should feel comfortable if they felt victimized.
Yeah.
That they need to come out and state that. Like, I don't think that it just the same way I would encourage female survivors to do. So.
Precisely. Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? Because I have, like, one other thing that I could
mention. Not really. Yeah, yeah. What you
got? I want to talk about a couple movies that have come out lately. I don't really have any, like, real specific notes on this or anything. I just wanted to talk about it. There are two movies. One is Crazy Rich Asians.
Hell yeah. I cannot wait to go see that.
Yeah, me too. And the other is All the Boys I Loved Before, which I watched on the plane ride here.
How'd you feel about it?
I mean, it's not my favorite movie in the world. It was cute, but like, it wasn't like, it was great. Okay. So you know how people always wear their shoes on like the bed or whatever in movies?
Yeah.
The older sister gets into her sister's bed with her shoes on.
Oh no.
I would
be no.
like, bitch,
get
take your
nasty
shoes
ass shoes
off. Yeah. Like gets in her bed and like pulls the covers up. I'm like, what? Like, no one's going to point this out. I even looked online and like, no one said anything. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know. There's weird shit that people do in movies that we tend to just be like, it's fine.
It's you're like, so weird. So there is a Vietnamese American main character in this movie. It is about a half white, half Vietnamese family. And the mother, who is the Vietnamese part of the family, has passed away. So it's Aiden from Sex and the City is the dad, who I love. And I loved him as the dad in United States of Terror, too. He plays such a
he's
great
a good dad.
Role.
He's also My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love him. I can't remember his name, and I never can, but
Jim
I love him so
Corbett?
Much.
Jim Corbett? Or something like that?
Something like that. I absolutely adore him. So he plays the dad. And the author of the story is of Asian descent. I don't know exactly where she is from. And she's talking about how she really had to fight with Netflix to have her main female character to be of Asian descent. And they were like, well, it doesn't have to be. And she's like, well, no, but like, that's who she is.
But why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, like that's because the thing. That's like, what she was written, like, but
it,
that's
it
who
is
she is.
So frustrating for me, and I can't wait for us to have an episode on casting issues, because I'm getting back into acting, I'm trying to, and
yeah,
the fact that Netflix would come back and just be like, well, the default's white, so I don't understand, why does it have to be Asian? It's like, well, why does it have to be not Asian?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand.
And I think that, you know, obviously had an effect, so it worked. And it's great representation. It's a normal story. It even brings up the racism in 16 Candles. So it's just a cute movie, easy to watch, good for just like a night in by yourself watching a movie or with your girlfriends. Like, it's geared toward a younger audience, but it's just super cute. So
cute.
And then I haven't seen Crazy Rich Asians yet, but I like that is, it's like the first time in, like they said, like 30 years or something, where it's like a mostly Asian American ensemble cast.
Well, I think it's the first time since like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that a movie has been this popular with an almost entirely Asian cast, which is crazy.
Well,
that
and again,
that's the case.
The genre that it is such a whitewashed genre.
Yes. Oh my God. Like, I can't wait to see this movie because I feel like, not only are rom-coms almost exclusively a white market, but also the fact that they would take this kind of risk, quote unquote, because we just heard what they had to do at Netflix to try and get this Netflix movie made. Imagine trying to make this kind of blockbuster rom-com, which rom-coms don't do that well anymore. They don't make that much money anymore.
I mean,
and
this
with a fully
is.
Asian cast. This one
this
is.
One
but
is.
It's the
because
first one in, like,
people want to see something different, you know?
They do, but do you remember the 90s when rom-coms were fucking everywhere? And, like, everyone went and saw rom-coms. And that kind of died off, and people stopped caring about going to see rom-coms. Like, I heard the number. It was like, this is the first rom-com to hit this much money in like a decade or more.
Right.
So yeah, it's really exciting.
I've been enjoying all of the like romantic comedies on Netflix that have come out, like Set It Up and a few others. I really enjoy those a lot. And I'm wondering if maybe we are headed toward a new wave of those. And with Set It Up, it's two white main characters, but then their bosses are Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu.
Oh, yeah. I would love a resurgence of rom-coms. Like, I really would.
And with more, like...
diversity.
Yeah. Like, it just... Yeah. And new storylines and new... Yeah, and not having it be so typical anymore.
Yeah, because even if you look at the rom-coms of the 90s, it's like the people of color characters are exclusively best friend characters.
Yes.
Always.
Or the magical, you know, Negro.
Yeah,
as we talked about.
And usually a woman in that case. Like, it was like a big mama, comfortable black woman would be your sage to give you advice.
Yep.
But I'm really excited to kind of see it pull away from that. Mm-hmm. And to pull away even further, where I want to see more, you know, mixed race couples, where it's not the subject of the movie, or more mixed race families in general, because that's where we are.
I want to see more romantic comedies too with somebody who is a different size, and that's not the main part of the story.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I feel like there's so many, because kind of like with The Magical Negro and for people of different ethnicities, the fat friend, you know what I mean? There's always that friend,
right,
other than them just being
a normal person.
Yeah
And I feel like they attempted that in their weird way with Trainwreck, but one, Amy Schumer is not a big woman despite what Hollywood would have you believe, and secondly, she's so problematic that it's
an issue. It could have gone in a better way had she not have been problematic. It could have been a introduction to something, you know what I
right.
mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Had she not turned out to be so difficult and awful. So.
I mean, and I do like, I mean, to give Amy Schumer some credit, I do like that she's so comfortable and confident in her body, given what I know about, because people in the Midwest are like, what the fuck ever, Amy Schumer is like not
normal,
a big girl.
Yeah.
But as someone who lives in LA and has for 7 years or more, almost 8 years, and has worked or tried to work in the entertainment industry, I give her kudos for being as brazen as she is, because they make me feel fat all the time.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, well, that's all that I really wanted to say. Is there anything else that you want to add, Keegs?
That's really all I have. But I was thinking, why don't we, since we are talking about movies, we got an email from M, who has written to us before.
Yes.
Talking
Would
about
you like Blues. To read that?
Yeah. I'll read it. So in our episode about Manic Pixie Dream Girl that just came out on Monday, we talked about Blue is the Warmest Color, and we'd never seen it.
I don't remember talking about that.
Yeah, we did.
But
We talked because we were talking about how manic pixie dream girls are typically very heteronormative. Like, it's usually a male-female relationship. And then we were like, well, we've never seen Blue is the Warmest Color, and, you know, what's the situation with that? And maybe we should watch it. And then M wrote us this email. So it says, Hi, girls. Me again. Do I ever shut up? The answer is no, I promise.
We don't either. It's all good.
You should start a podcast, Em. I loved your episode on Manic Pixie Dream Girls. Your comments were very insightful, and I felt myself nodding along as you spoke. Anyway, you brought up Blue is the Warmest Color, which is either loved or hated by most in the queer female-identifying community, depending on who you ask. Essentially, it depicts the dramatic love story between a girl who identifies as a lesbian, blue hair, and another who identifies as bisexual, but is still discovering her sexuality. To give you the gist of the criticism, 1. The sex scenes are very unrealistic for two young girls in high school slash early college with not a lot of sexual experience. Very porn-like, but well shot. Additionally, the director was accused of pushing the girls too far in some scenes, almost to the point of sexual abuse. Some comments came out that they would work extremely long hours and have to shoot the same sex scene over and over until they felt very vulnerable and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Though they are French actresses, you can still find articles and interviews with them in English. I could go on, but my plane is about to take off. If you wanted to cover this movie for a problematic fave in a future episode, it would be super interesting. Love you girls and keep up the good work. Forever raging, M.
We love you, M. Yeah, yes, that would be a really great one to talk about.
I think so, too. And what I would love to do with that is maybe I could ask my friend. I have a friend who I had who's a lesbian who I had a really interesting conversation with a few years ago where we talked about lesbian porn. And I think I brought it up and she kind of scoffed at it. And she was like, lesbian porn, because the porn that you would see that's quote unquote lesbian porn on like Pornhub or whatever is not that. It's it's completely designed.
Like two straight women or it's at least just all for the male gaze.
Yeah, it's completely designed for the male gaze entirely, which I would question whether or not, even though I know that for a lot of people, blue is the warmest color, really resonated in the, and for this girl who I'm talking about too, actually, we had a conversation about that. It really resonated with her community.
Yeah, the sex just wasn't realistic because, you know, it's like, that's not what a first time is like, you know?
Well, and it also makes me feel really sad for them and uncomfortable if they had a straight male director who was pushing
them. Who had
them
do it for hours, yeah.
Right. Which to me is never, I mean, as an actor, doing that to your actors, even with any highly emotional or intense scene, is bordering on abusive.
I was just going to say, like, that is so abusive and awful.
Right. So to have them do it with a sex scene where you're already vulnerable and needing to be comforted, needing to be made to feel comfortable, not comforted, I guess, but anyway, because you're in a really awkward situation surrounded by people being made to do things that you wouldn't normally do in front of other people, that to force them to do it for hours is
awful.
Awful. Yeah.
Yeah. Just awful. So thank you so much for sending that in. I would totally love to do that for a future episode. I think that's a great idea.
Me too.
Have to watch it. We got to talk to some lesbians. We got to get our shit right.
And watch some interviews, for sure.
Yes, for sure. So, awesome. Well, before any of this could possibly go wrong, I'm going to send you this audio file, Keegan.
Okay.
So, let's wrap her up.
Okay. Well, hold on just 1 second. I just want to give a quick shout out to Christina, who I love very much, who subbed for me last week.
I'm so we're best friends
to
now.
Her. Good. I'm so glad. The episode sounded great. And, you know, I hope listeners, if you liked that, let us know for future when we go out of town. You know, we're happy to try and get some guests in here if you like a little change of pace, because she did a great job and I'm really grateful.
She did amazingly. And we had to record it twice. So I got to see her twice and we got to create a great friendship and it really meant a lot to me. And yeah, it was a great experience for me all around. It was
good.
Awesome. So,
so glad.
So glad. Love you, Christina. So I guess with that being said, we encourage you
to rage on. Bye.
That's going to sound so weird. Bye.